Good evening, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Good. Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ, blessed Master, saints and sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king, reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Bliss. Amen. It's so lovely to be here for Thanksgiving. Came in a bit of a rush as my mother's refrigerator and freezer gave out just as we arrived, and so cleaning out everything from the freezer and getting rid of frozen popsicles that were no longer frozen and all the fun. But it's nice that it happened while we were here, so otherwise she would have been left perhaps by herself to do it. Sent something out to all friends today titled Thanksgiving. This week we celebrate Thanksgiving. There's a long tradition of having a day of Thanksgiving, from traditions that celebrated and gave thanks for a successful harvest, to having days of prayer and thanksgiving for successes. There was recognition that fasting and prayer strengthened the faithful. Jesus talked about the spiritual power that was to be derived from fasting and prayer, and he said unto them, "This kind of dark spirit can come forth by nothing but prayer and fasting." Fasting and prayer were known to provide spiritual strength for overcoming, and thanksgiving was the rightful reciprocity for divine grace received. Thanksgiving is an attitude of recognition for all that God does for each and every one of us. Although many do not give God a thought, no one could exist even a moment without the will of God constantly creating this vast universe. When we lack forgiveness and habitually review what we don't like about others and situations in our life, our mood sinks. Anger and depression will then dominate our lives, with negative results within and without, and a disconnect from our greatest resource for victory in life, our connection with the divine. On this Thanksgiving Day, besides the great food and time spent with family and loved ones, I would like you to spend some time in deeper thought and meditation on true thanksgiving. Giving thanks for all the obvious good in your life. Making a mental list of those things and giving thanks to God. In addition, give thanks for the blessings that challenges bring, i.e., chances to be of service to others, time to demonstrate courage and strength in your life, opportunities to pray for people and situations. Giving thanks to our eternal beloved opens the gates for grace to flow. It is an acknowledgement of the truth, and it is a gift we give to ourselves. In that spirit, I give thanks to you, dear devotees of God. I give thanks that as kindred spirits we can go to God together. There is no greater joy I have than in coming together to love God and sharpen our focus on attaining self-realization, the greatest goal in life. I give thanks for the opportunity I have to serve all of you through presenting teachings, prayer, and times of giving counsel. This includes many who do not formally follow this path, but are kindred spirits nevertheless. And I give thanks for all the support you give to Carla and I financially and through service, and your prayers and good wishes. This means more to me than I can ever say. It humbles me to think of it, and I feel such an outpouring of God's love and grace through my heart that it aches with love and bliss. My friends, may we so live our lives that we stand before our Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, and feel the bliss of their approbation. With eternal love and blessings, David. I think a key within that writing comes from when we lack forgiveness and habitually review what we don't like about others and situations in life, our mood sinks. And a project that I oftentimes give to people, I always give to people, when, especially when they're having depression in their life, is to keep a list of gratitude. Write it down every night, at least three things that you're grateful for. And it's amazing when we are feeling very depressed and not very hopeful how difficult it is to even come up with three things oftentimes. But when you do, it begins to change and transform you to do that for 30 days and to hold that. And what happens is all through the day, you start looking for things that you can write down that night. It's like if you're going to buy a new car and you've been looking at an Audi, for instance, and before maybe you didn't notice them at all, but suddenly you see one, and there's another one of this color, and that's another model number there, and you pay attention to them, or before they just simply went by and you never even noticed. So to begin to think of having gratitude in your life, we all are the recipients of tremendous things, and not to acknowledge that is a real problem. And it creates this downward spiral in our emotions. So I'd like to read from Paramahansa Yogananda in his commentary on the Christian scriptures. And this comes from the first reading is from John. And as he was going down, his servants met him, and he told him, saying, "Thy son liveth." Then inquiring he of them the hour when that began to mend. And they said unto him, "Yesterday at the seventh hour the fever left him." So the father knew that it was at the same hour in which Jesus had said, "Thy son liveth." And he believed, and his whole house. This again for the second miracle that Jesus did when he was out of Judea into Galilee. And Master's commentary. The many instantaneous physical healings wrought by Jesus were accomplished through his knowledge of the same scientific law by which he had earlier changed water into wine, the relationship of thought, life energy, and matter. The universe, being a product of divine mind, can be changed by the divine mind at any time. God's will created all things through condensation of his invisible ideation into light of life energy, and thence into atomic matter. God realized souls who are in tune with divine will cannot instantaneously produce any desired changes in matter, including the human body, by concentrated thought, which acts on and restructures the subtle energy matrix underlying each material form. As the energy in man's body can be directed by his will to initiate or influence the movement of any body part or function, so also by omnipresent divine will, any vibratory movement affecting atomic changes can be initiated in any body, in anything, at any place, no matter how far or distant. This creative thought of sickness was firmly fixed in the consciousness of the nobleman and his son. But Jesus thought differently, and so the son recovered. Jesus was able to displace the dream of sickness in the son by a dream of health. A divinely strong mind implanting a thought of health and perfection in another person can dissolve a stubborn thought of illness and cause a surge of restorative healing energy. This is a very interesting topic, isn't it? Because as we go deeper into our life in meditation and gaining the stillness, we recognize the truth that this universe itself, as the physicists have told us, is nothing but vibratory energy. All these atoms and subatomic particles that are in constant motion. And they're held together, so the great saints and mystics down through the ages have told us, through divine will. That God creates with light, said, let there be light. And there was light. And from that, all creation came into being. Everything that we see in a material sense are variations of the vibration of that pure light that turns one thing into a solid, another into a liquid, gives one thing one color and another thing another color. These are all just simply differences in vibration of those atoms, those molecules, those substances and chemicals that make up the properties of any particular thing. When you tune in to divine consciousness, you begin to understand the architecture of this universe. Before, we had been so convinced that this world was just simply a manifestation of matter, and as a result, it could not be changed in the way that's being described by Yogananda. But here we come to understand that as we attune to the divine consciousness, you start to have experiences. I've had many such experiences. I remember one of my first of walking down a path. I was out in the woods, and I saw the transformation of everything that was around me from something that was more subtle than even the energy of everything that was. It was the thought of everything that was. And I was walking upon a path, but the path was nothing but a thought. The trees around me were nothing but ideational creations of trees. It was incredibly subtle. I was very uplifting. And I felt the truth of it. I knew the truth of it deep inside of me as I walked down that forest path. At other times, feeling the vibrations of things. If we practice, we can sense and feel the vibration of people, of different objects, and so on. There was a wonderful book, Jacques Lucerne, I believe his name, the author was, who became blind when he was in elementary school. Somebody gave him a shove. He wore glasses. He hit the edge of the table, and the glasses broke. And the glass went into his eyes and rendered him sightless. And from that time on, he had to learn to get along in this world without being able to see. What he discovered is that what the natural thing to do is when you're trying to walk without being able to see is you try to stretch out with your senses, what you're feeling, and try to sense what's in front of you. But he discovered that if he got quiet inside and became receptive to the things that were around him, that he could sense much more and be much more accurate than if he tried to stretch out, if you get the meaning of it. So he practiced. It was very difficult to do because he was walking at times without having any idea what was in front of him. But he got to where he would hold his hand in between tree branches, and he would feel the vibration of that tree. And then he got to where he was able to walk towards a tree, and he could sense when that tree was in front of him, and he knew that it was a tree. Another time he was walking, and he could sense a rock, and he knew the size of the rock. He knew the dimensions, he knew that it was a rock itself versus a tree. He could feel the difference in vibration. And it took a lot of work in the beginning, because our natural sense is to try to stretch out, and he had to make himself quiet and listen and become receptive. And as a result of that inner quietness, he got greater and greater mastery over himself. He lived at a time when the Nazis marched into France, and he was in France. He became an early part of the resistance to the Nazis. And you might think, well, what could a blind man do? And they used him to interview people because he was so good at being able to pick up what was behind somebody's voice. Other people would get entranced with what they saw about the other person. But once again, he would get quiet as people were being interviewed for the underground, and they would try to send in spies. And he would be able to detect them. And the one time that he was overruled on what he had felt about somebody was the time that a spy did infiltrate into the ranks, and then he was taken into the concentration camps. And the Nazis had absolutely no use for anybody who was blind, anybody who had any disability, anybody who was mentally retarded. So as badly as people were treated in these concentration camps, he was treated worse. But he was brought around by those who got to know about him, particularly to those who were dying. And people were dying every single day, and he would tune in to the person as they were dying. And he was able to give them a calm and a peace that nobody else, even people who knew the individual very well, because he felt it inside of him. And he was well known throughout the camp for this. And he was literally climbing over dead bodies before the end came, and he was eventually rescued and became a professor at a University of Chicago. So a tremendous life, a very difficult life, but what a tremendous life. And he wanted to write about these experiences because he wanted to convey to others what he knew deep in himself, that this world is made up of vibratory matter. And that when you get still inside, you can sense that. And it improves the quality of your life on every level. He was a yogi. He discovered the same principles that the yogis did and that the great mystics have down through time. When you begin to explore the vibration of this universe, it's a tremendous thing. It totally changes your view of the world. No longer are things just simply material manifestations. You realize that behind every material object, there is an energy vibration that is within that. And that as you tune in to the divine mind, that is rising up even higher than above the energy or even the idea, and you tune in to the spiritual projection that first creates the idea, and then the energy, and then finally the material object. And you discover that original design, the architect, the master architect, of what they design for each and every person. You get past the idea of disease. You get past the idea of sin. You get past all of these things. And you tune into its original innocence, its original perfection. And as you do that, you can awaken that same knowledge within what we think of as inanimate objects or animate objects, including people. When you see that perfection in any person, and you help to awaken that in that person, you start their journey on toward total healing. Perfect health, spiritually, mentally, and physically. We should always start with spiritual healing first, because it is this great divorce that has happened within us, that is at the root of all other problems. And if we solve that problem, then we take a big step in solving all the other problems that we have in our life. When Jesus would do a healing, inevitably, if somebody asked him, or sometimes he just simply said it flat out, "Your faith has made you whole." Now we know that because he was a great spiritual master and he saw the perfection within that person. But it also took that person's receptivity to that idea, to that quickening of his spirit. And if he did, then the transfer would happen, and that perfect virtue, he called it that one time, the virtue has gone out from me. And as a result of that, a great healing took place. Now sometimes our healing isn't most needed in the physical. It is in the mental, or it is in the spiritual. But it can happen on any or all three of those levels. And when they do, then there is a tremendous transformation. Just to be healed in the body is good, but it is not the whole thing. As I mentioned in this article on Thanksgiving, we most oftentimes think of giving thanks for those things that we benefit from, that we like in our life. We're so happy that we have good and positive relationships. We're so happy, perhaps, for the material things that we have and the comforts, and that we have plenty of food and all the rest of it. But to give thanks for those things that really challenge us, that are difficult in our lives, and to find the way that those are blessings in our lives. We'd like to think that if everything just came our way easily, we'd be so much happier than what we are. But you know, you really have to think about that in order to see that that's not necessarily true. There are people who have lots of things come easily to them, but they have no sense of gratitude about it. In fact, they oftentimes feel that they're not happy at all. And many times, people who have much fewer things in this life are much happier. It can be the case that as we get more successful in this life, that we get more arrogant, we get more immune to feeling any sense of gratitude. It was the case of the Pandavas from the Bhagavad Gita and the Mahabharata. And when the Pandava brothers had to fight this great battle that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, there was a tremendous strain, and many times it looked as if they were going to be defeated. Eventually, they were successful. And the mother of the Pandava brothers went to Krishna, and she saw him as the divine word made manifest in flesh. And so she went to Krishna, and she told him, she said, "Krishna, what I want is for you to always give us hardships. Because when we have hardships, we're always focused on you. And when things are going easily and smoothly, oftentimes our minds wander away." Now, personally, I think we can skip the hardship part and just go directly to what it is that we want, which is constant remembrance. The Buddha, in one of his Eightfold Paths, is perfect memory. Give me perfect memory. And it's not just memory in an ordinary sense, being able to remember people's names, being able to remember lists of things. That can be useful. But the kind of memory that he was talking about was a divine remembrance, was to always remember what it is that we are in this life to do, and to have that perfect attention upon the divine consciousness always, our true self, that we are here to become liberated, not to just get better at manipulating the prison that we're in of this worldly consciousness. it's fine to seek after goals in this world, but not if it makes us blind to the divine goal. Then we have substituted baubles for the real stuff, for the real thing that we have come to do. It's too easy to do. I know it myself. I was given a vision one time of a previous life that I had. And it was at the end of the life. And as I left this body and rose up above this body, I came into remembrance of what I had really come to do. And I had not achieved my spiritual goals at all. I had gotten caught up in all the minutiae of life and had completely forgotten my divine goal. And in remembering that that was a goal I had come into this life to achieve, I had it before I had the life in the body. And because I had not achieved it, that I felt great sorrow and a great disturbance in my mind, but a tremendous determination came to my mind that I never would forget that ever again. And so that is my promise, that is my vow, that is my prayer, that I never forget that is my first and foremost goal in life. That with all the other things to do and all the other details in life, that I should never forget God and the realization of my true self. When you realize your true self, many of us, most of us, are not acquainted with the true self. The true self is discovered by becoming quiet inside. And when we get quiet inside, then it's like a body of water. That before the wind was blowing that water all the time and making waves, the wind is your breath. And when your breath becomes still and your mind becomes still, the surface of the water becomes mirror-like and begins to reflect everything that is above. The mountains, the stars, the moon, the sun, everything is reflected in that still water. And your mind is like that as long as it is agitated, as long as it is focused on the things of the world only. Then all you see is the things of the world. But when you draw yourself into that stillness, be still, said the psalmist, and know that I am God. Be still in the mind, in the spirit, in the breath. And suddenly all the divine virtues get reflected. But what happens when we try to go deeper into meditation? All the things of the world come up to challenge us. They can be the everyday things that we are preoccupied and suddenly we're thinking about everything. The mind is so fast. It goes light speed. And suddenly we're someplace way off over here and then over there, and we're slingshot all around this universe of ideas. And then when we begin to resolve all of those, then things from the deep subconscious mind begin to erupt. They can be the things that disturb and distress us. And so we have to deal with all of those, and they can reach back into other lifetimes, patterns that have been with us for a long time. How do we know that we're resolving all of that? Because we can enter into that stillness. One time, Yogananda was asked for a picture, and he said, just give me a second here. And he took a breath, and he turned the mind within, and he said, all right, you may snap the picture now. And somebody asked him later, Master, why did you ask for a moment before you had the picture? He said, first, I wanted to go into Nirvikalpa Samadhi before I had my picture taken. He wanted to be in that uplifted state of oneness with God. And he did it just like that. Here he was in a crowd, in a midst, busy with things. Somebody asked for a picture. And immediately, he stilled himself And he went into divine perfection. And it was from that place that the picture was taken. And as you see so many pictures of him, you see God manifested through his eyes, through his face, through his being. It's tremendous, really. It's tremendous. And so he was there to show us the way. And there's so many ways that he brought about great healings, even as Jesus did. Mother Hamilton's daughter, just a young girl, was standing on a chair, and her brother playfully pushed the chair, but the chair went over, and Barbara landed straight flat on her back, and she was injured to the point where she couldn't move. And she was taken to the doctor, and the doctor said, "I don't think that she'll recover, but if she does, she won't have all of her mental faculties any longer." And so Yogananda was coming to town. Mother took her to see Yogananda. She was just a little girl at the time. So Master laid her down on his lap and passed his hand up and down her spine. And after some time, he said, "There, she'll be all right." And from that day forward, she fully recovered. And it was a great miracle. It was a wonderful thing. Mother herself had many healings from Master. One time, she had an ovarian cyst that was the size of a goose egg, and they were concerned because if it burst, if it was a problem, she would die instantly. And they wanted to operate, but they were concerned about operating. And so Mother sent a telegram to Yogananda, who was down in Los Angeles where he stayed, and told him about her condition and would he pray for her. And so he sent back a reply telegram. And when next time she went into the doctor, she went to get the x-ray, and the cyst was entirely gone. Like that. No operation was needed. And I'm sure they were checking their x-ray machine to make sure that it was doing it properly, because what happened to it? Master described one time when he was healing an individual, he was thinking on them very greatly. They were in the hospital. And right at the time that he was praying so deeply for them, with absolute and total concentration, and that the people who were there in the hospital room with this individual heard a tremendous crash like a lightning strike that happened right inside the room. And the man began to recover from that moment forward. These are tremendous things, and there are so many stories of healings and miracles with Mother. There were a couple who were in a very bad car accident. They were driving on I-5 across the University Bridge, and they were in the fast lane. Dale wasn't speeding particularly, but he was going the speed limit, maybe a bit more. And there was a truck that was broken down in the fast lane, and at a total dead stop, there was no lights right there, and the truck had no lights. He had lost his lights when it went out. And so Dale didn't see it until the very last second, and their car slammed in, going that speed, right into this dead stop truck, and of course they came to a dead stop. And they were uninjured. Diane had a little bit of soreness in one of her feet. At that moment, Mother woke up right dead out of a dead sleep. And it was a cry out of pain because she absorbed the shock of it. She didn't know in that moment what had happened until later on they had called her and told her and said that they had cried out her name and thought of her just before the crash happened. And so the impact of that crash got transferred to her, and she came to and gave a talk the very next day, and she said she was very sore that day, but that she wanted to come and give the talk and serve everybody in that way. So these are wonderful things that are not just reserved for a few. Certainly, you have to attain the state of consciousness in order to do these kinds of healings or transfer of situations into your body. But once you do, then you are able to be of a true help to those who are in need. Sometimes you do it through intentionality. Your mind goes to an individual. I know that experience many times myself, that somebody, I'll be in that uplifted state of mind, in total union with God, and suddenly my thoughts will be drawn to somebody. Nothing that I do at all. They just automatically come. And I feel a tremendous vibration go out of me. And I know that something has been affected. Sometimes I know the specifics, and sometimes I don't. But it's a wonderful thing. And you can feel it. You know it. It's not just something of imagination. It's not something that you conjured up yourself. It is more real than living in this body. So this is something that we all have the capacity for. Jesus said that if I be lifted up, I shall lift up all mankind with me, and particularly those who attune to his divine spirit. There are many who believe that he was the only one who could attain what he attained, be who he was. But the truth is, he came to awaken mankind, even as the Buddha came to awaken mankind. Buddha means the awakened one. Krishna, Rama, all the great ones, Lao Tzu, they came to awaken mankind to their divine heritage. It wasn't to lord it over mankind and say, oh, I'm the only one and you have to bow down and worship me only. One of the great things about a realized master is that they become an open doorway. If you think on them, if you think on the great ones such as Jesus or Master or Mother or Buddha, they are open doorways, and they will, as you approach them, you will go right through that open doorway and into infinite consciousness. If that individual is of ego only, then you only get ego. It's like a closed door. Not only that, but they've gone the way. So as we follow in their footsteps, it is like climbing a mountain and going on a path that is well worn, with lots of markers. Otherwise you can get lost. You can get into real trouble. But when we follow the teachings of a master, then we can tread on that path, and we'll know that we'll be taken by the most direct, the most perfect route. Now, it doesn't make it easy. We still have to climb. But we're given the means. This means that we've been given through Kriya Yoga, through meditation, through focusing on God, remembering God, chanting God's name. These are the most powerful, most tremendous tools. But they are all wasted if we don't apply them. It's like the proverbial husband who gets all these new tools. And he's so proud of them, and he puts them up on the shelf in his shop, but he never takes them down and uses them. He just likes the idea of them being there. We have to use the tools. We have to learn to employ them. We have to become masters of using those tools so that we can really demonstrate that we can enter in to these highest states of consciousness, even as Master demonstrated in just within a few moments. And this is who and what we should be. It's what we've come to do. There is so much to explore in divine consciousness. One of the things, the great truths that Jesus, the great Master, said, in my Father's kingdom there are many mansions. There are tremendous realms to explore. It is just simply our spiritual unadventurousness that keeps us rooted in this material reality. When you think about operating in this body only and through these five senses, we limit ourselves, and to a spiritually freed person, that would seem like a prison, to be limited only to the body and the five senses. You are so much more than that. You can become one with the vast consciousness that has created this universe. Think of the power, the intelligence. But not just that. But this world, this universe, is a blissful expression of God. We literally live in an ocean of bliss. The air that you breathe is scintillating with bliss. Your consciousness may not be attuned to it. You may be numb to it. And that is what was meant when it was said that there are those who are sleepwalking, inasmuch as being dead to who and what they really are. This is the great difference that can come about when you spiritually awaken. It is as if you were sleepwalking before, that you were dead, and now that you live. Many of these miracles that are talked about in Jesus' time, they could have been physical miracles, but they can also be explained as spiritual miracles. Those who were blind, now they see. Those who were dead, now they arise and live. Those who were lame, had difficulty walking on the spiritual path, now rise up and are able to walk the path with strength and with grace. This is a spiritual renewal, and it is time. It is time. Everyone listening right now, it is time for you to spiritually awaken, to no longer be sleepwalking in your life. This is our opportunity, and if we let it pass by, there will be no grand judge who will judge us and tell us how wrong or how bad we are for not doing it. We will judge ourselves. We will judge ourselves. And then we have to account to ourselves. And when we have come for the purpose of knowing and realizing the divine, then we will feel very sorry indeed. But to give thanksgiving for our life, to give thanksgiving for all the good things that have been given to us, but most of all, to give thanksgiving for being put onto the path, that we are drawn to it, that we persevere in it, that we never give up. We may slip, we may fall, we may go in the wrong direction at times, but that we never give up, we never give in, and that we persevere until we get the complete realization. When Master asked Sri Yukteswar, his guru, what the signs would be, because in realizing God, Yogananda wasn't getting great power at that time. And so he thought that perhaps he hadn't gone the whole way. So he asked Sri Yukteswar, what are the signs? How would I know? And Sri Yukteswar said, when you have ever new joy, ever new bliss within your being, then you will have realized God. There are some who have power over the entire universe, but they have not yet realize God. That's a completely different thing. Cultivate thankfulness regularly through the day, at the end of the day. List those things that you're thankful for. Make it the little things. When you attune yourself to God, really attune yourself to God, and realize God, you will realize that thankfulness is always an intimate part of feeling connected with God. It'll just naturally come up in you. And you can be thankful for the smallest things, for the smell of a flower, for just being able to walk, just having the sun to shine, just having breath and being able to breathe, to think. to feel your oneness with God. It's just the little things in life that sometimes are the greatest miracles and the greatest joy. And to somebody who's totally wedded to this world, that would sound perhaps like nonsense or like a dreamer, but it's not so. It is the truth. So let us no longer keep ourselves in a state of separation, the great divorce from the One, from the Divine. Let us so love God and seek after His presence, His bliss, His joy, His enlightenment, His wisdom, His light, that we want that more than anything else in this world. And we don't stop until we get it. And then thankfulness, thanksgiving will be 24/7. We will always be in a state of thankfulness because it'll just be the most natural thing that will come to us. Master used to say, change yourself and you will change thousands. If you want this world to change, change yourself first. Mahatma Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in this world. See, it's so easy to rail against the things that we don't like about this world. But who has the courage to change themselves? You see, that's a much more difficult order. And so to change yourselves, begin it with cultivating thankfulness. Now, I've said this much so far, and I'd just like to stop there and see if there are any questions about anything that I've spoken about or anything that you may be wondering about in your own spiritual sadhana, your own path.
Take silence. Is everybody doing swimmingly good? No problems.
I do have a question, David. Mm. One of the things that I've been contemplating a lot is kind of what you're talking about, but getting to that different realm or that higher realm. I'm mm-hmm. not sure. But it's like, it's that fake it till you make it. Cause I have no idea what I'm even, you know, wanting to attain.
Mm-hmm.
I've never attained that.
Right.
You know, and it's so I've been having conversations with God about that. It's like I don't even know where I'm going. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We don't know what we don't know.
Right.
But we sense it. We sense that there's something more. Whether it's because we read about it or hear about it and it awakens something in us. We feel the truth in it, but we haven't actually had that experience. Or we've been granted a glimpse, but when it recedes from our mind, it seems like a dream, or we can't quite put our hands on it again. And it's one of the most amazing things, I think, that we can be lifted up. We can have tremendous realization, and when we come back down into what we might say normal or human consciousness, that experience fades and can fade almost completely. People can completely forget about ever having that experience, where while we're having the experience, it seems more real than anything that we've ever experienced before. So that's a great mystery, and in yoga that's called Maya, that kind of division. And on the individual, for the individual soul, that ignorance is called avidya. And that's the individual ignorance of the soul. Maya is the cosmic delusion that's universal. So when you open yourself to what might be, what can be, you don't have to know beforehand. In fact, to some degree, you can't know beforehand. And that's where faith mixes in with your own experience. I know that there's something more. And so without trying to prescribe it, because if the mind tries to create it, it's going to do it wrong. Whatever the mind conceives is going to be inaccurate, because it can't. It just simply can't. Even if you've heard description of it, as the mind tries to conjure what that is, that can be an uplifting experience, but you know it's wrong, ultimately. It's going to be different than whatever that is. And so you just simply open yourself to what you have not yet experienced. And as you think of doing that, just what do you notice? Just track your own thoughts around that. Just what do you notice as you think of opening yourself up?
Well, as you were just, even the first time you said that opening, I just felt this sense of, from the heart place of.
Ego mind is so tricky in there because it tries to orchestrate our spiritual experience. It tries to design it, and it can't. It's hopeless at doing it, but it doesn't stop it from trying. So we always start with a mental conception because that's what we have, but we always realize that that's opening a door to something bigger. That's also part of our resistance to it. It's because we don't know what's on the other side of that door, and that can be frightening. It can be, I don't know who I would be. If I'm not this present day self, I'm not that thrilled with what I have today, but I'm not sure what's on the other side of that door, and I'm not sure I want to open myself to that. So there's an act of faith of stepping out, opening up. The image one time came to me of standing on a precipice, and that I had to step out into midair. That was the feeling that I had. I had to do it. And I could stay where I was, but I would never go anywhere. And I couldn't go back and I couldn't go forward. I would just stay stuck. And that's the description of an awful lot of people. And some people remain good enough with that. But if we're really here to have a spiritual adventure, that's never good enough. And eventually we have to take that step. What we find is that when we do that with a feeling that God is there and orchestrating everything, we never fall to our death or to oblivion or to nothingness. We're always caught. And then we enter into this much wider world. Anytime I've had a spiritual experience and thought that, oh wow, this is remarkable, and I was kind of getting to the bottom of things, that inevitably a new door would open and I'd open up into a much wider universe than what I could have known before. And sometimes you'd use exactly the same words you used before to describe something, only now it has much bigger meaning for you. That's why you can hear some of these teachings again and again. And they mean something new to you, because you're not the same person anymore. You've opened into a wider universe. And you go, that means a lot more than what I thought it did last time. I thought it meant something last time. Now I say it even means more than that. And I don't know where the end of that is, because it just seems to be opening up into bigger and wider. And if you heard that only from the human ego, oh my gosh, it never ends. But when you feel spiritually attuned to it, you don't feel that way. It's like an adventure. Oh, what's the next thing? Mm-hmm. And it's exciting, and it's enlivening, and you can't wait. You want the next thing. But more and more we trust that the divine intelligence is orchestrating everything. We don't have to orchestrate that, only put ourselves into attunement to it.
Another challenge.
Yeah. It is, because the ego is so gratified with planning things, orchestrating things, doing things. It works in many ways in this material world. Spiritually, it doesn't work. It gets in our way. It closes the door. And then we rail at the universe for closing the door. when we've done it to ourselves. So the mind cannot know what the next step is. And I would say if you thought you knew, it would be a lie. You'd be lying to yourself. You can have a hint, you can have a notion, but you can't know the truth of it until that door finally opens and you walk through it. So good for you. You're not lying to yourself. And it's not, once you understand it, then it's not even a negative. It's just, okay, what's the next thing? I'm ready.
I don't think I've quite said those words yet, even though I'm feeling there.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And to always feel like you're ready. What is the next thing?
In my humor, I don't want to be caught off guard like I was last time. That was so powerful when you said God can call at any time.
Yeah.
Oop. I thought a lot about that.
But what is there to be afraid in that? Really? You know, if our shield and our sword are God, is our strength in the light, and that there's a divine intelligence that's planning everything, then what is there to be afraid of? And one of the qualities that happens in realizing God is fear just simply drops away. Now we have to encounter all the fears that we've had through all of our different lives and times. And that's something very real. But when we finally achieve that end goal, fear goes. Shame goes. And those are two very close guards to entering back into that perfect garden where we walk with God and talk with Him and are in complete union with Him. That's what yoga means, union. It's union with the divine. So we certainly have to encounter those things and overcome them. But as we do, we're freed from them. And you have less and less fear. And what is there to be ashamed of? If you're a divine creation, you're made in the likeness and the image of God. There's no shame. We can stand naked before God and feel completely at ease. Wouldn't that be lovely? To be completely at ease with yourself.
Yeah, I had a couple of things in meditation the other day come up, and stuff from way, way back. I thought, where's that? Why is that coming up?
Interesting. Because it's there.
Yeah.
And it comes up not to torture you, not to plague you, but to get released. Mm-hmm. So one of the easiest things we can do is to visualize a flame of light, column of light right in front of us. Open up an avenue and just pass it straight through into the flame. Let it go. Just as quickly as it comes out. It's like all this stuff that's in the basement. In order to clean out the basement, it has to come through the main floor, which is the conscious mind. And it goes straight out into the burning barrel. Why store it on the main floor, or why push it back down into the basement? It's there to go into the burning barrel, just throw it in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was interesting. That was kind of mm-hmm. what came to me over it was, hey, it's like, why is this surfacing while I'm getting rid of it?
Because it's there.
Because it's there. It's still there for whatever.
Right. Sometimes we think that we've completely resolved something, and then it comes back on us. And it's not that we didn't resolve it before, it's just that there was more there than what we could deal with at that time. So we dealt with what was given to us. Mm-hmm. And we rise up higher and we expand out and we come back around and we encounter that again. And we may do that time after time after time. But each time we've risen up higher, we've expanded out, and we can take a deeper swath at it until finally we can just take the whole thing, chuck it into the flame, gone. Then it never has to revisit ever again.
Which in this case requires some attention to it. Current day things too, so it's interesting.
But it's all passing into the flame. All we don't see, we don't have to put on the merry-go-round of the mind. Mm-hmm. Pass it straight into the flame. Sometimes we suffer the delusion. If we understand it, then it'll resolve itself. But oftentimes that just leads into more and more drama around it.
Yeah.
Somebody went down to Australia and Geraldine did, and I, when she came back, I said, "Oh, is there any new sayings down there?" And somebody before had told me that there's a saying down there: "You're not wrong. Never tell anybody you're right. You say you're not wrong." And she said, "Oh yeah," she says, the saying that I heard down there was no drama." So, no drama. Done with the drama. Mm-hmm. The drama of Leela, this constant play. Mm-hmm. Eventually we'll see that there's nothing new under the sun. Things are recycled again and again and again. Any other questions, thoughts, observations?
You were talking about healing, how mm-hmm. Christ's mind from far away could heal.
But yes.
Person, so like when we're praying for other people, mm-hmm. I understand that there are different levels of healing. Like the person, you know, maybe the healing is really for us, like it's really mm-hmm. not about them.
Mm-hmm.
Or
there's definitely great benefit that comes to us
mm-hmm.
as we focus in on the light and on the healing.
I'm thinking about Phil, Peter's dad, has a brother that has just really struggled. His name is Dean, and he's just struggled with substance abuse his whole life, and like I think sometimes he's held in it because of other people's thoughts of him.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when you were talking about that, I was just praying for him. And
yes.
I don't know what that means, but I know that he gets, I think it's really difficult. And, you know, so I guess, like, what is our role in healing? Like, do we just, when we think of someone, just pray for them and whatever is intended, just be with that.
I think our greatest thought of anyone is to see that perfection inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
That person we know them to be, if we were able to tune in to their true self,
mm-hmm.
beyond whatever difficulties, mm-hmm. whether it's an illness, an addiction, whatever it is. And when we think back on our own life, if we had a teacher or somebody who saw the best in us,
mm-hmm.
maybe better than what we saw for ourselves, but somehow they saw something,
mm-hmm.
and how that made us feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe we wanted to live up to that, it just made us feel great.
Yeah.
You know, Papa Ram Dass used to say, "I see God in everyone," because that is the greatest way to lift that soul up.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, if you think on Dean,
mm-hmm.
and think of him in his perfect self, in his true self, in his light self,
mm-hmm.
beyond the addictions, the part of him who wants to be free, the soul in him, who wants to learn this lesson, really wants to get it, but is struggling on a human level.
Mm-hmm.
But above that, the part of him who's really determined to get the lesson. And as you focus on that and think on that, what What do you experience? What do you feel?
Hopeful, that he'll get there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that he will get there.
Mm-hmm.
He will get there. He's determined to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether he makes it in this lifetime or not, that's some degree up to him, up to grace, you know. But that the outcome is assured.
Yeah.
And that you see that strength, that light, that greatness of being that he is, that he already is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of channeling that into his body and into his mind and for him to receive that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you feel that grace flowing through you,
mm-hmm.
see, you feel the effects of that as well. But that helps you to know that you're getting it. You're tuning into that right place.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right when you say what other people think of him. That can be association, that can be other people who drink or use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that keeps him in prison. Or other people who don't do that with him, but they think of him like that.
Yeah.
And it loads something on him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not that we live in a never-never land, that we don't see the reality. Of course we see the reality.
Mm-hmm.
But we see a greater reality than just on-the-ground, today reality.
Mm-hmm.
We see the soul reality that's above that, beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
And we never let go of that.
Mm-hmm.
We hold on to that
mm-hmm.
with all of our strength. And as you think of just one person doing that for another person, just kind of in an impersonal place, what would you think would be the effect on the receiver of that prayer?
I think actually that it scares him.
Mm-hmm.
That he knows that he could.
So tune into that part of him that's beyond the fear. What you don't want to do is you don't want to limit him because
uh-huh.
you're limiting your own thought about him.
Uh-huh.
It's easy to do.
Yeah.
You know, we see somebody who's misbehaving. It's
yeah.
easy to see them as the misbehavior. That's all
yeah.
that they are.
Yeah.
And to know that he's more than that, you see, that's our spiritual discipline. That,
mm-hmm.
But what that does is it teaches us to focus on God.
Mm-hmm.
That impersonal transcendent aspect, not limited to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
Because how many lives did we live in total ignorance, doing the wrong things,
mm-hmm.
and yet there was a soul inside of us that would never be satisfied with just that.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we not give somebody else the same grace? Now, we can do that at the same time that if somebody's behavior is very destructive, we might even hold them at an arm's length
mm-hmm.
just because
mm-hmm.
they're sinking all the people that are around them as well as themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, but we never let go of that, you see. We never let go of the higher self within that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the greatest thing that we can do for them
mm-hmm.
is to hold on to that image of God within them. And when you connect with them, when they're able to receive it,
mm-hmm.
it activates that light inside their brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we think of genetics, we kind of come to think of genetics as something that's a sentence that's given to us. But more and more research is showing that genes and gene structures are responsive to thought
mm-hmm.
and to vibration. And I've read some studies recently where that's being borne out.
Mm-hmm.
And that this kind of RNA material that before was seen as just kind of junk genetics isn't junk at all, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's very responsive to thought and to vibration. So when you are sending somebody thought and vibration, you are helping to change the very structure of their body. That's how Jesus could enact spontaneous healings. Now, it didn't happen with everybody. Mm-hmm. One time he was walking through crowds and they were all reaching out to touch him. He was getting famous as a healer. Perhaps nobody's getting affected. And suddenly he says, "Who touched me?" Mm-hmm. The disciples were around. He says, "What do you mean, who touched you, Master?" Mm-hmm. There's like hundreds of people. No, I felt virtue go out from me. Who touched me? And they looked around, and there was one person who had just had a spontaneous healing. And he felt it, you see. He didn't know where it went to, who it was, but he felt it go out from him. So you look to make that connection with that soul. Find the place where they're receptive, beyond the fear, beyond the addiction. And when you make that connection, something transfers. And you feel it, just like when Master is talking about that this thunder clap happened in this hospital room. You feel that. You feel that power. You feel that virtue go out from you. And you know that some effect has been made. The other thing, one other thing, Mother used to always say that the prayer for the... May this be fulfilled for the highest good of everybody concerned. And try not to become too prescriptive. Sometimes we feel directed for a very specific healing. But other times we don't know exactly what's right for the person. It's a very hard thing to say, but sometimes suffering is the right thing for that individual. It awakens something in them. It awakens strength, courage, endurance. Perhaps it finally forces their mind. We don't like to think on that, but it's true. So we don't always know that taking away a situation for somebody is the right thing in that moment for that one. So if we say, let this be fulfilled for the highest good for everybody concerned, that covers the basis.
Takes me out of it, like,
right.
You know, like, oh, well, I think he should
like,
do such and so.
Right, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which may or may not be the right thing for him. May or may not be for the highest light of everybody concerned. But we can pray with great determination and great tenacity, mm-hmm. focused on the perfection, the God within the individual or the situation. And to never, so often as that person comes to mind, just do that.
Yeah.
You may find that it comes to that place where you feel that virtue going out of you. You feel that
mm-hmm.
connection. You feel that transference. Fortunately, God never let go of us, even though we never gave him a thought. Okay. So turning the mind within.
And feeling that perfection coming into you. It comes in most powerfully through the base of the skull at the back of the head. What Yoganandaji identified as the medulla oblongata within the nervous system. And that you open yourself to this tremendous vibration. You can feel it within the body as a tingling vibration, a power, an intelligence. And to let it come in and heal your body. If there are places in you that are tired, exhausted, sore, depleted in any way, dark in any way, see in particular that that healing vibration is going into those parts of your body those parts of your brain. And then gradually it begins to expand out and fills out your auric field, that electromagnetic energy field all around your body, about arm's length out, all around your body. And if you could see it with spiritual vision, you would see that it is a white, yellow, golden light, and that it permeates your body and extends all around you. And then you can go on extending that light so that it fills up this entire room and all the people in it. And to extend it out to this entire town and all the people. Seeing this town filled with the white, yellow, golden light and vibration of the divine. And that all the people, all the things are all supported in that light. And then to see that light go on expanding all over this earth and extending out beyond this earth, and you with it, your consciousness identified with it, until you see this entire earth permeated with that white, yellow, golden light, and that it's bathed in that light, and you see it in its perfection. You see it as that original creation in all of its purity. And then you expand out, and you see that light permeating this solar system, this galaxy. And then you see this galaxy as an island galaxy, and that there are tens of thousands, tens of millions of other galaxies. The vast kaleidoscope of this creation. And you feel yourself expanding out and easily expanding out and seeing that light permeating all creation. And it is in that light that you feel the perfection of everything that is. Even when solar systems, even when galaxies collide and crash together, it is perfection. And that as time unfolds, that perfection will be revealed. And it is beyond human computation. Nevertheless, it is a fact. And then bringing your consciousness back down to this little human body, and feeling that perfection through and through and through. And that as you keep your attention upon God, you become the perfect divine instrument through which God can walk and talk and speak and think through you. And you are filled with that ever new joy. And the life of ignorance and addictions and pain and suffering are things of the past. I give thanks that we have been put upon this journey, upon this path, and that we can travel it together. and that we can grow in that light and that love and that perfect joy. That is my prayer for you. Pranams, I bow to the light within you. Have a joyful Thanksgiving.